Do you crave deep and meaningful conversations? The kind of conversations that jazz you up, stretch your mind, and leave you wanting more? Welcome to Suzanne Says, Courageous Conversations about Life and Living. I'm your host, Suzanne Bird Harris, and I talk with friends and colleagues about what lights them up, their fears and flaws, who they've been, who they are, and who they're becoming. You know, the stuff that makes and breaks us. So get comfy. Here we go.
Hello, Ellen. How are you, my dear?
I am always good when I'm talking to you. For real. Well,
I'll take that. So I have been wanting to get you on here for a hot minute. And I have some questions that, although I know with us, we may not need them, but I do have a couple of questions. The first of which I've asked everybody so far, and now I've done it, 14 times? So yeah, it's a tradition. I can't talk. A tradition. So yes. My first question for you is, without mentioning what you do, who are you?
This is like the kind of question that my people that I work with get. That was pretty good, right? I didn't indicate. Yes. Who am I? I am a certified teacher, social studies secondary. Don't judge. We have a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. Did that for a while.
You're talking about
do. Okay. Who am I? Okay. Who am I? I'm someone. I got it now. I'm a dog mama, rescue dog mama, dog lover. I voice nerd. And I say that as nerd is a compliment in my world. Yeah. I love knowing about how voices work. I'm a year-long resident of Virginia, used to be a resident of New York City. I'm a Pittsburgher by heart and
Steeler Nation.
Woo! Even though they really sucked last week. Sorry, guys, it's just true. If you're a Steeler fan or if you're not, you know. But it doesn't matter. Steeler fan for life, Steeler Nation for life. Villanova, Nova Nation, went to Villanova. So I'm a Villanovan. And what else? Croatian Irish, both important to me. I'm a pool obsessed person. I'm obsessed with the swimming pool where I live now because it's just like a resort. And I'm a reader, lifelong reader, obsessed with my Kindle because you can download books whenever you want, which is amazing. And a music lover and a singer and a new and not good guitarist, but loving it. I think that's pretty. I think
okay, you're starting to slip back into do, so I'm going to stop you there.
Okay.
It's an incredibly hard question to answer without going into the doing.
Yeah.
That we all do.
Yeah.
So now tell us what you do.
What I do currently is I do a couple of things. My main time focus is I run a nonprofit that I founded called the Fund for College Auditions, and it is a really niche kind of thing that I worked in, created a for-profit that did the same thing many, many years ago, and in 2019 sold it early 2019 to fund a nonprofit. And so what we focus on is preparing high school students, high school seniors, or people that have taken a gap year, you know, who are wanting to go to college, preparing them for their college audition process, which might seem like, well, why? Because it is statistically more difficult to get into college for acting or musical theater to the top programs, and there are more than two handfuls of those, than it is to get into Harvard. I just did this research again for this year. So Harvard undergrad, Stanford Medical School, I believe, and or it might be Stanford Business School. So the point is, really statistically difficult, more so than really basically any undergrad. The top programs statistically, and I say that because there are a lot of ways to judge programs. The top program for one person isn't the same one for other people, but they take between 2-4% of their applicants. And this past year, Harvard took 4.1% of its applicants at the undergrad level. So as a as a coach in this process, which kind of evolved organically out of me being a teacher and somebody who liked singing, and then I went to grad school for speech pathology with a focus in voice, and that all combined, and I was a theater person, but it really started as a singer, so it all came back to singing for me. I saw how cost prohibitive this was for people that just to do the audition process, because there are so many fees associated with it, not only application fees, but audition fees. The students have to do a what's called a pre-screen, so a video first audition to be invited to do the live audition, then travel. And there were certainly, that was benefiting, you know, upper middle class students. And because of the way our country is been structured historically, we were there was really leaving out a lot of students of color, and then also students who just we wanted to support students who in casting rooms in the professional world were kind of othered. So our mission focuses on low-income students, especially those who fit the most underrepresented categories in film, theater, and TV, which are students of color or global majority. Both terms are kind of equally acceptable right now. And then disabled performers, trans, non-binary, neurodivergent, and weight divergent. And so that's what we do. We pay for their whole, we support them financially through artistic training, college guidance. So, you know, a college counselor specific to this process, which is very, very, very specific.
Yeah.
And travel, all the fees and all the things that they might need, like specific clothing, dance clothes, dance shoes for our students who are from Southern states, winter coats, because they're going to be auditioning primarily at a big group audition, which is the meaning the schools come to one place, not that they all audition right for the schools, but they don't sell winter coats in Georgia, I have learned, you know, and so they just don't need them. So we provide them with any of the things that maybe they need, you know, suitcases. We had a student in our first year, this is our third year currently of our scholars, as we call them. And he had seven people in their family, and they had one suitcase that they shared among them. And so we were like, you know what, we're going to get you a suitcase that, because travel is just a part of it when you're an actor.
Yeah.
Things like a dance / audition bag. So they become, I always tell them, think of me as your auntie who's your auntie with the credit card, but it's not my money. And their parents, we always involve their families, their parents, or whatever responsible adult is in their lives, and they get to accompany them on their trips. Because that's really important, you know, that familial support. So that's what I do. I work for the for-profit that I founded called Musical Theater College Auditions, MTCA, and I do vocal work with them. So I do, I meet each of the new musical theater auditionees. I hear them sing. I give them recommendations about vocal health and vocal technique, and just kind of general, I'm there generally as the institutional memory of the grandma of the group, as I say. And I do some private practice voice therapy also.
Yeah. So true or false, in your life at this moment, you're doing exactly what you want to be doing.
True.
That is beautiful. That is so great. And I wanted to say just then, oh, you're so lucky, but no, it's not luck. It's decision making.
Yeah.
And now let me
thank you. And let me amend that by saying, am I getting paid for the nonprofit work? Not yet.
Yeah.
And that's always the stress of a nonprofit. I'm getting paid for the other stuff I do, which allows me to do the nonprofit, but it's got to, my stress right now is that in the third year, which is kind of the last year, for example, grant making groups want to see 3 years of financials, and we're doing well, but we started because I was able and as planned to take the money from the sale of the for-profit company and kind of loan that quote to the organization. And there's no timeline for paying it back. That's very common. You're either like a rich person who starts a nonprofit, which I am not, or you're somebody who infuses your money and then eventually gets it back. But this is the work I love. I never feel like I'm working. I know that's gross. You know, it's kind of that that cliche, like, I'll never work a day in my life when you do what you love. But I have to get paid. And so my big stress right now is I am doing what I love almost 100%. I don't love stressing out about the fundraising. Mm-hmm. And that's why nonprofit organizations have a development person. I love the fundraiser that Suzanne has crafted for us. It would not be working without her. And I love the like the legwork of it, but the stressing out about are we going to make budgetary,
are we going to hit budgetary goals and all
yeah,
that.
Quotas. Yeah. That part sucks. But you know, I'm not a bad business person, but I'm less a business person, much more of an educator. But yes, in terms of the work, I'm doing everything I love to do, which is great.
You know, I've asked other people, okay, so if you didn't get paid to do what you do, would you do it? And it's a resounding yes for you.
Because here I am, and this is year three. You know, and I'm lucky that I have that other, the job from, you know, founding the for-profit and maintained a good relationship, and it was a fair sale. So, you know, I could have probably made more money, but that wasn't my goal. And that allowed us to remain like a real family in that group. And they've been incredibly supportive of the nonprofit. It's just a great synergy. And I also do a lot of pro bono stuff, not to toot my own horn, but for voice therapy, because actors, you know, they don't always have a lot of money. So it's not like a transactional thing, but I just really believe that if you do what feels right, then there's kind of a karma or a, you know, that the universe sees that.
When you put good out there, it comes back to you tenfold.
Yeah. And sometimes it feels like, you know, I've had this experience with this the nonprofit, where every time I get like really down about, you know, our money reserve is shrinking, and you know, because we're paying for the kids who are consistently coaching and doing incredibly well this year, by the way. They're, you know, we know our educational model works and our selection process has gotten more refined, and we luck out too with kids who are just, they have it together, you know, but they also really grow a lot. We're really focused on kids who come to us with a real need for skill-based training in at least one of the aspects of musical theater or acting, which is really one aspect, because there are other low-income students who have opportunities, and that's awesome, but we want to find the kids who haven't had opportunities yet. And usually they're not at arts high school. Sometimes they are, but usually they're kind of doing their own thing sort of by themselves, and you know, they just don't have resources. So that's who we're there for. But anyways, every time I get down, something literally falls into our lap, like a $20,000 grant that I had no idea was going to come to us that we didn't apply for, or this fundraiser that we're doing, which we may talk more about, was just, I was watching, you know, it's Giving Tuesday and all these other, the Broadway community is really great about fundraising, but I'm watching all these other people raising money for other things. And I'm like, no, help us, Broadway. And then Sarah Bareilles, she was our first, the first person involved in our fundraiser, and she reposted about it. And I was like, okay, universe, I see you, because you got a lot of followers. And also she's so kind and so genuine, you know?
Yeah.
You have to put a lot of asks out there and be prepared to hear no and not take it personally, which I'm learning to do, because, you know, as part of, I'm like a tangential part. I'm like in the second concentric circle of the Broadway community as a voice therapist and a vocal coach. And so it's hard not to take it personally sometimes, but
right.
You know, everybody has their own passions, and bandwidth is really low at this time also among the Broadway community, because they're not only back working in a pandemic, but it's their holiday schedule, which means they barely get time off. So
right,
trying to just see how, that's how I talk myself through right there. That's what I do.
Right. So let's talk about the impact of COVID on all that you do. How, because, you know, you and I were in contact last year. But you also were kind of MIA a good chunk of last year, no doubt, because you were busier, as my dad would say, busier than a one-arm paper hanger, trying to do what you're doing with a global pandemic blowing up in your face.
Right.
And everything, certainly many industries have been just gutted by the pandemic, and certainly Broadway and musical theater was one of the first things to get smacked upside the head and say, you're done, you know, you're just done. And for the foreseeable future, we're not going to let people gather. And so tell me about, all right, so we're in this school year, that started with your first class of scholars.
Correct. Yeah. We had just finished their big audition trip to Chicago, for which we bought people coats. That ended, I don't know the exact date, but it starts Super Bowl Sunday and then it goes through that week. So like, mm-hmm. you know, around the 10th, 9th, 10th of February, 11th, maybe, came home and Broadway shut down on March 14th, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. I think 13th was the NBA, and the next day it was Broadway. It was a Thursday. I very, very well remember all of it. And so our students didn't get to visit colleges. They didn't. Well, actually, that's not true. One school that two of our scholars ended up going to, Cincinnati Conservatory, happened to have their accepted students date in the first weekend of March. Was March 3rd, I remember, just luck of the draw. But most of them didn't get to visit. They didn't get to, the schools adjusted really, you know, very nicely, considering they had to teach the kids they had there. I mean, either way, they adjusted very nicely, but they had to figure out what to do with the kids they had there, the productions that were postponed that those kids were a part of. And that's like, you know, part of their education.
Yeah.
Those aren't just like after extracurriculars. That's part of what you're learning as an acting or musical theater major. And also their new class. So they did a lot of Zoom things, but our fundraising model was and you know, it actually probably wouldn't have worked the way I thought it would have. I don't know. It's hard to say because now we do have the COVID situation still. But when I started this, I barely gave a thought to fundraising. I thought, oh, the Broadway community, they're so hungry to do benefits. Every Monday is the night off for most shows, and sometimes Sunday night. So every Sunday night, every Monday night, there's some kind of benefit. Usually there are more than one. And you get people who are involved in your cause. A lot of times it's your personal friends. Mm-hmm. And so when we kicked off, as you know, Suzanne, we did a big kickoff concert in July of 2019. Right. Just like all the Broadway MTCA, the group that I founded, the for-profit, those students were invited to sing with Broadway actors in numbers from shows they had been in. And that was super successful. It was really honestly easy to create because everybody that was involved I knew personally, and they were excited about it. And we set it up so that the actors had very little rehearsal time. You know, they just basically had to show up and do their thing. And they were wonderful and really, you know, generous and giving, and it was a blast. So we had another concert in November of that year, also very successful, focusing on the LGBTQ+ population. And that was a blast and it was successful. And then all of a sudden, you know, we were thinking our next concert that was planned was going to be the next big one, at least, was going to be a celebration of these the class of 2020.
Right.
But that never got to happen. So they went to school successfully, all of them. Actually, one of them enrolled in the military, but that enlisted in the military, but that was sort of always kind of a consideration because her family was very, and she auditioned for the army band with, you know, they're very elite as a singer in the army band.
Yeah, so
that was cool.
Yeah.
And that was just something that is, like I said, it's in her family for generations. And we always say to the kids that if this is not what you do as a career, that is not a waste of our donor money and it's not a waste of your time, because this can parlay into so many other careers. I have so many stories about that. You know, lawyers, business people, physicians. I mean, really, it's a great foundation for anything. And just like anything, like when I went back to grad school for speech pathology, you're gonna have to do prerequisites anyway, so don't stress about it, you know?
Right.
I tell the parents that too. That's hard to stomach if you're paying tuition. But for our kids, our goal is that we get them as close to a full tuition scholarship as possible, because without that, it's not doable for most of them. So Right. Then we had our scholars from last year, only one of whom I've met in person, and I just met her in late October because we planned to go to a concert together. She goes to school in, she's from LA. She goes to school in New York City. So I paid for her to come down on the train to when we went to a concert in DC, supporting Laura Benanti and cheering for her, who's she's a Tony winner, one of our big Broadway supporters. But other than that, I haven't met any of them in person, which is weird. It feels like when you teach via Zoom, and I've been doing that since 2005, when Skype was really in its beta form. You know, it feels like, you know, people like Suzanne, I feel like I know you, but I have never met you. Mm-hmm. So the reason we went MIA last year is because right at the beginning of COVID, we created a fundraiser that you really helped with. But everybody was like, what are we going to, you know, every arts person was now a teacher, and a lot of them are. They're great teaching artists. They just didn't have time. So that was like mildly successful. And thankfully, our development director works for a company that was called Herman Miller at the time. Now it's called Miller Knoll. And she came up with this model where we produced Broadway concerts with 5 Broadway singers, and they each sang 2 songs. We were able to pay them, which was important to me, nicely, like as their credits befitted, mm-hmm. and as befit their credits. And then they were closed concerts just for invited audiences of the vendors and customers of Herman Miller. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. Customers less so than vendors. And the vendors also helped sponsor. They're a company that designs high-end offices, like ABC or BlackRock or something mm-hmm. like that. So they would pay for the performers and the virtual stage manager, the Zoom manager, and then they would also give a donation, and that sustained us through all that. We did, I think, 5 of those for different offices of theirs, San Francisco, DC, a couple for New York, and we did 1 for Global Pride, and that was, it didn't require any extra building on our part. And it wasn't from a show perspective. It's not hard to do, especially because a lot of these performers were doing concertizing. I love that word. Mm-hmm. One of them taught it to me, and mm-hmm. doing things on Zoom. So they had like fancy setups, and they really know what to do.
Oh, yeah.
And especially after we did the first one, our wonderful Broadway actor, who's a producer, Telly Leung, who produced it and does all kinds of things like that, as well as starring on Broadway and many other things, we got the model down. So we were super lucky because our initial model evaporated, and then we had to figure it out, and like every organization did, and that worked really well. And then we are, last year we also had the silver lining of there was no audition travel, which saves us many thousands of dollars. Because that costs $2,000 to $3,000 per student and family, and that's mm-hmm. and that's with really good prices,
right.
But we don't want to, we want them to have, we always say we want you to have, and you will have, everything that your upper middle class peers have, who have like kind of a budget but not a really restrictive budget,
right?
So that we don't want them to have to worry about any of that. And they're such good kids. One of them texted me this morning, one of our class from this year, and I'm there for them. I want them to text me. And he said, hey, I've just found out, he's a transfer student. He said, I found out I need to send some more transcripts from my first school. Is that okay? But they're $8 a transcript. And my heart broke. I went, that's totally okay. And he's such a good kid. And that's a lot of money, for him. And it's not, it's not that any amount of money isn't significant, but they're so careful with mm-hmm. that because they all have access to this credit card, and it just, they're such good kids. They get it, but we also don't ever say, we don't want them to feel like they have to say thank you all the time, but they're good kids, and because they pay for the stuff on their sort of on their own with the credit card, it sort of registers like, oh, this is really adding up. So that's good. So last year, no travel, all virtual auditions, that affected everything. It seems like it worked out pretty well for the colleges from what I've heard from faculty and our students' reflections on their peers, like it was pretty representative. And all professional actors now are, that's how they're auditioning for most things, television shows. Who was I just talking to someone? I've heard several stories of like, yeah, I self-taped and I submitted and I got the job. And I'm talking like big TV jobs.
Yeah.
Things like that. And so now this year we are on the cusp of the live auditions. We have plane tickets to Chicago. Who knows, with this new Delta variant, all the kids are vaccinated and most of them are boosted. We've had a couple of cases of breakthrough COVID in our kids in states where they're not masking. Sorry, I'm just going to say it, which was really sucky because it hit, they went back to school. Mm-hmm. They have all this prep work to do. Most of their deadlines to submit all the preliminary stuff is December 1st, through which you get invited to live auditions. And our student with the toughest not an unsupportive family, just the toughest sort of history and stress levels, had a really big family emergency, and she had COVID at the same time. And so it was just, and she was, it was breakthrough. You know, everybody has been vaccinated. You have to be vaccinated to audition live, which is good. So that is, it might affect this year. It's still affecting fundraising to a certain degree, which is why we figured out this another unique kind of virtual fundraiser. And I'm really pleased to say that people are saying, like, this is so unique. It's so creative. And it wouldn't have happened without Suzanne. I mean, every day. So hopefully we get to brag on you about that, Suzanne. And then, you know, it's kind of like we can't plan anything. We have 3 years of kids who are owed a New York concert. I really want that. You know, this is going to be the third year of our kids. And people want to hear the kids sing, and they're phenomenal, you know, like phenomenal. Or they're phenomenal dancers. They're one or, you know, one or the other. And by the time they go to a year or two of school, they're just like off the charts phenomenal. But it's so hard to plan a concert in New York anyway. And then planning it with all this travel, it's just, we don't know if we can do it this year. So I have another idea. I'm gonna hold off on announcing it, but I have another idea. And that is, it's still involving the generosity of the Broadway community who is on tour, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And maybe doing some smaller regional concerts, because that is still a resource that we wonderfully have, is the Broadway community. And this is a niche mission, so the people that care about this mission
care a lot.
They care a lot, and they've generally, they understand, they've been through it themselves, they've been through it with a kid, or they just understand the inequities in education in general. And it really seems to come from people that are on the high school end of this, as opposed to the professional end. There are wonderful professionals helping us, but the professionals are generally, as it makes sense, more focused on what's happening to the kids in college, and then in their own professional worlds. And that's a different animal. You know, it's just a different, it's a related but different mission.
Yeah.
I specialize, by the way, in not short answers, as you know, so.
That's what you and I are paired to draw to in that regard.
Yeah.
So I hadn't really thought about it, but your first class being the class upon which COVID landed.
Yep.
The second class completely, and now this third one still, I had not really connected those dots that all three groups of scholars are not quote unquote done. They haven't done all the things that were planned as part of your year long take them by the hand and walk with them through this process.
Yeah.
They did all the work and they're still waiting for their party.
Right, exactly. And we got to do a party. I'm glad you used that word. We got to do like a celebration in New York, but they weren't all there. They were almost all there in January of 2020. Most of them happened to be there for an audition. And also we got tickets through a teaching artist TFC paid for them, but we had tickets to the play, a soldier's play, which was all Black actors and a couple of really notables, David Alan Greer and Blair Underwood, who is still hot, by the way. And the moms who were there will tell you. And then there were three white actors in it. And one of them is one of our teaching artists. He's actually an essay specialist who works with the kids a lot. And so he arranged a talk back, which was incredible. It was everybody except one person, all the stars stayed and they spent time with this group of, I think there were seven, and they happened to all be Black kids, and they just would have stayed forever if the crew guys hadn't been like looking at their watches, you know. Yeah. But that was in the middle of a 5-show weekend. So we had a party for them at John's Pizza, and that was really fun. We invited all their teaching artists. You know, they do a nice party there, and we're gonna do another one. It's not a concert, but they're all going, all seven of them. We have seven this year. And why such a small cohort? Because it's so expensive. It's $15,000 to $20,000 a kid. We budget carefully. You know, we don't cut corners with them, but we also really look for when is the best time to take them to New York, which is January, by the way, if you're wondering. It's way cheaper to go in January than, after New Year's, you know, like once the New Year's crowd leaves. So we were definitely having a party for all seven of them. They have a mock audition, a practice college audition on January 8th. And I've been looking for places. And it struck me yesterday, wait a minute, you don't want to take them to a restaurant. That's a COVID thing. Even though in New York, they're very careful, but still, like, people take off their masks. You know, you have to have a mask and a vaccination to go in anywhere. So I think we're gonna rent a studio space adjacent to where they're having this audition. And because the original idea, it's not about fancy food. It's about hanging out, having, you know, having bonding and meeting your teaching artists live and, you know, just being a fam. And so I think we're going to do that. But, you know, even that, I was looking at a cool restaurant-y place, like a restaurant pub that has a nice event room, but which isn't fancy schmancy, right next to where they're going to be. And then yesterday it struck me like, wait a minute, COVID, you know, because I haven't been back to New York. I would lived in New York for 15 years, moved here in July to Richmond, Virginia, where I live now, and I haven't been back yet. So, you know, I certainly have a lot of friends and colleagues who are there, and I'm always monitoring, and I still get my newsletter in my email about my former neighborhood, the Upper West Side. But, you know, it's easy because in here, I haven't gone in and sat inside a restaurant yet, you know, and it's just not something I think about here. So yeah, hopefully their trips, you know, we booked everything so that even though airlines and places like that are being flexible, we booked Southwest for everybody because they're the most flexible. And the most telling thing I think about COVID and how it's still affecting the whole world and the theater industry is that this is the only time in my theater going life, my Broadway theater going life started in 1990 when I was a senior in college, that you could get, it's usually like no refunds, no exchanges. Well, you can get your money back, no questions asked, because of they don't want people coming to a show because they want to preserve their money who have any inclination of it. So you don't even have to tell them why. And so that is
cool. A big change.
It is a big change. It is cool, but also disheartening a little bit. I mean, heartening and disheartening, you know, that they're being so careful and it is safe to do this. And anytime, as if anybody follows theater news, you know, anytime they test the cast and crew of theaters at least three times a week, and they shut the show down immediately as soon as there's any positive. And then they keep testing until there's no trace of COVID. And then so shows will, like Chicago and Broadway, not to call them out, but they're the most recent who had a COVID case, and then they shut down the show, and then they shut it down a little longer. That happened to Aladdin the day after they reopened. They had to shut it down, which sucks, but also is the best thing to do. Yeah. So our kids, you know, they're really adjusting. I think it's probably hardest for the kids who were, I mean, it's hard for all of them, but the kids who were seniors in college and juniors in college, who missed out on a lot of those culminating experiences, like their senior showcase, which is a trip to New York where they get to perform. Those are usually all throughout March and April and a little bit into May. They were all camp and they were all virtual. And that's cool, but it's cool, especially because they're all auditioning on tape. They call it on tape, meaning on video, but there's still like that palpable energy in the room that you don't get when it's on tape. So yeah, it's just hard on all the kids. And the ones who are still in school, they're, you know, like they're in the middle of their training. One of our board members has a son who's a junior actor. You know, I always forget how old they are once they're in college. I think he's a junior, but they just found out that he goes to DePaul, and that they're going to go virtual at least for 2 weeks after Christmas, 'cause they're worried about travel.
New strain.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's sad for him, and he's very sad 'cause he was just, you know, kind of getting his mojo back going live, but just it's the world right now, you know?
It is. You know, my nephew graduated high school last year in 2020, and he didn't get a graduation. You know, they postponed, and then they did a graduation, but nobody was allowed to attend. You had to watch it on Zoom. And I'm like, okay, so look, not to devalue anybody's celebration of education completed, but graduations ceremonies are like,
yeah,
it's most totally. Of the time anyway.
Yeah, right.
Can you imagine on Zoom? I'm just like,
well, the good news is you can like do other stuff, you know. We're all skilled at that. Yeah, like I mean, kind of,
you sit there for 2 hours waiting to hear one name called, and they're, I'm done, I'm good now, thank you.
And like tell myself, I'm gonna spend this graduation doing my laundry or whatever, yeah. You know. Although I tell myself that every time I'm committed to something that's like, I know it's going to be tedious, and then I end up like watching tea, so, you know. I downloaded this app. I highly recommend it if you have a Mac. It's free. It's called Magnet, and it lets you split your screen with only on one screen. You don't have to have an external monitor. Uh-huh. And so I can like put my Zoom window to one side, and I can do my email on the other side. You know, it's good times.
What's it called? Magnet?
It's called Magnet. Yeah, it's part of the Mac. I don't know. I read all these random things on Lifehacker and BuzzFeed, and it's just a thing that is free for people that have the Mac system. Like I have a laptop, but I'm sure it's on a desktop uh-huh. too. Yeah, it's super cool. And you can say you want to split like one quarter and two or one quarter and three quarters or half and half. And you can go up and down, you know, like top half, bottom half. So I put my Zoom screen on the left because we look from left to right. I should probably put it on the right actually. But anyway, because then my email's on the right, and that's where I look. That's a directing principle, by the way. We read from left to right in American English, or in America, uh-huh. Uh-huh. I guess all English speakers. Yeah. And so that's like where you figure out where your eyes track. Okay, anyway. Stage directors use that.
Oh, you're a font of specific information.
Why, thank you, ma'am. Would you like to talk about vocal cords? Because, which, by the way, is not spelled with an H. That's chords, music chords. It's C-O-R-D-S. Because they look like, we used to think they would look like flat, like ribbons, but they actually have three dimension. We know now. This uh-huh. is so nerdy. But that's how to remember to spell it right. Because there are so many high-level publications that I'm like, you guys, you spelled it wrong.
Yeah.
That's not good. So C-O-R-D-S. Vocal ribbons. Vocal, not ribbons, vocal three-dimensional things. Ribbons.
Ropes. Cord. Yes,
there you go. Thank you. Goodness, I couldn't think of that. Little ropes.
Wow. You know, I could geek out with you on vocal cord stuff for an amazingly long time, actually.
Yeah, it's cool stuff. I find that
fascinating because I don't think about it very often. But
yeah,
when I talk to you, I'm like, ooh, all those questions come up. Like, I have Googling in my future. Like, yeah, I have questions.
But you know what? But like anything medical, and I do it too, when it's, you know, when it's me in a field that I don't understand, which is basically vocal cords is what I understand, you know, Dr. Google often is messed up. So there are if you want to look at voice information, you want to look at an ENT, you want to look at a medical office called a voice center. Voice mm-hmm. centers have laryngologists who are ENTs that are just the T, ha ha ha, they all say that. But they're specialists in vocal cords, and any information on their website, and what makes it a voice center is that they're also voice specialist speech pathologists, which not all speech pathologists are. Like, just like I'm not a specialist in anything really but vocal cords and articulation too, because that's actor related. Mm-hmm. But I'm not a specialist in there are many other parts of speech pathology I'm not a specialist in, but a voice center is the laryngologist, the speech pathologist. Sometimes there are researchers there, and they're just dedicated to the care of vocal cords for performance voice, for which includes teachers and you know, salespeople, telemarketers, everybody who's on Zoom, which is everybody now, you know, and also airway things. That's a vocal cord. Because your vocal cords are at the top of your trachea, your airway.
Right.
That's a laryngologist thing too. So any medical voice centers website, those have good information. And there are lots of vocal cords on YouTube. But if you look at vocal cord injuries on YouTube, you stand forewarned that of course they're like super disgusting most of the time, right. And they're going to terrify you. But there's some like just normal vocal full function things that are cool too. And if you're super like into this, watching people sing or on an MRI is fascinating. And you don't see your vocal cords, but you see like what all the muscles do from the side.
Ooh.
It's really cool. NYU, I think it's NYU Voice Center. I know they sponsored this, and I think it's through them that it's on YouTube. Oh my gosh, it's cool. Yeah.
You can see a recording of that on YouTube?
Of the MRI.
Oh my God, the Google MRI has recording. Everything.
It does. Oh. So you see like, if you see from above, the vocal cords, that's what the scope is. Uh-huh. It looks like female anatomy. I'm not going to say the word out loud, but y'all know what I'm talking about. Right. But that's the camera that the doctor uses. The MRI shows not that because it's encased in cartilage, but it shows them all the muscles, like your tongue. Your right. tongue is freaky geeky, man. Like it is huge and yeah. it is very significant in voice use.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's so neat. Yeah, they put like them in an MRI.
You can't yeah. talk without using your nope. tongue.
Yep, right, exactly.
Glue
yep.
it to your teeth real quick. You can't do it.
You can't do it. Yeah. yeah. It got kind of good after a while because that's like an exercise we use. All you stick your tongue out, and that's how you help it not get tense when you sing sometimes.
You know what you just sounded like? Lexi, what? When she got her tongue pierced.
Oh, my God. Oh, no, really?
That thing swelled up and filled her whole mouth for a week. And she was like, at the time she worked at Krispy Kreme, you can imagine. I was a quilly quim.
Yeah, because that's a K is a there. We learn nerdiness in speech pathology of like, it's called place of production of sounds. And some of them, like, shh is, well, it's your teeth. It's your teeth cheeks. And tongue, but yeah, yeah, and your cheeks. But sometimes you don't need your tongue, but you almost always do. Or like, ba 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 is just your lips. That's called yeah. bilabial. Yeah. But no, I can imagine because I got my like cartilage, so I have like regular ear piercing, and then I have a hole above that and a hole above that that's still in like the lobe of my ear, but the higher, uh-huh. highest up one, it still hurts, man. Like, yeah. I can't imagine getting your tongue pierced. And my nose hurt, but it, like, you don't notice it as much unless you have to blow your nose a lot. But like, anyway, whatever. we're getting off on a tangent, but I can imagine getting your tongue pierced because, yeah, it's going to swell.
We gave her the blues for the solid week. I was like, running around with my phone trying to record her, just asking her questions and like press record, like, oh, yeah. I want this for posterity.
Yep.
She was like, Mom, enough.
Enough.
Okay, enough. This hurts. She yeah. said she has several piercings and something like 23 tattoos. And she said that the only piercing that she's gotten that she won't get again if it were to close up or something. Mm-hmm. is her tongue. She said yes. that hurts so bad.
It's got so many nerves in it that I can imagine, you yeah. know? Yeah. Woo.
I'm like, no. And part of it for her was a little more intense, I believe, because when she was younger, like six or so, somewhere around that age, she put her teeth through her tongue. Like you could stick my pinky finger through her tongue. She
oh my goodness.
Fell and bit it.
Yeah.
And she yeah it healed up, but there's scar tissue there, and
yeah,
don't you know right where that tongue ring wants to go. And I'm like, a tongue is bad. I mean, I bite my tongue and I'm crying for 3 days.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
That tells you how much fucking holes in it. Oh hell no.
That tells you how much nerve endings are in it when you bite yeah. your tongue and it hurts so badly. Yeah, yeah.
No.
You're freaking me out, man.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, okay, to be fair, this started with MRI of voice, vocal cords.
I know, so. It's my fault, totally my fault, usually is.
Oh, goodness. Well, so I have 50,000 questions for you.
I'll try to make shorter answers.
No. Don't be anything but Ellen. You know, musical theater, I have a passing experience with, you know, I was in choir and music was a big, huge part of my mm-hmm. high school career. Mm-hmm. It probably is the only thing that kept me human because we were moving around in my high school years and I was never in one spot for very long. And I know for sure to this day that music was the thread through all of it that I clung to. And God bless America, I'm good at singing. I have a good voice. And
hence karaoke, right?
Oh God, yes. Yes, that's my therapy. And I'm not fun to do karaoke with. I have to be in the right frame of mind to do karaoke the way other people, mm-hmm. where you just get up there and goof around, play and sing a song, and you know, you're yeah. drunk and acting a fool. And
yeah,
that is not it. That's not it for me. I'm like, I'm the one, everybody shut up and listen, I'm about to sing.
Do you watch Schitt's Creek at all?
No,
I don't. There's an episode where, for those people who do, there's an episode where David does karaoke and he is so funny, and he's like that. He's like the diva of karaoke, and his friend comes and says, long story, but his friend comes and says, like, you know, I thought you were going to go to bed. And he's like, I know, but I have like a bunch of fans who are going to be really disappointed if I don't finish my set. You know, like that's where his mindset is.
You know, it's cute. I totally identify with that because one of my friends, Lynette, her dad comes to, her mom and dad come out on Friday nights sometimes for karaoke. And one night they were there and I love singing Patsy Cline because I can blow me some Patsy Cline. Ooh. Uh-huh. And I sang Leaving on Your Mind. Uh-huh. And that man about fell out of his chair. He's like, when I was done, he goes, I thought Patsy Cline was here.
Oh my
I'm
God.
Like, and he's trying to tip me. Come tip me. And I'm like, no, honey, if you want to tip somebody, tip John, the DJ, you know?
Yeah.
So a few weeks later, they were having their anniversary party at the bar that, and it was a Friday night. And they texted me going, are you coming out? John wants to know if you're going to come sing for him. And I'm like, oh God, now I've reached a pinnacle of success here. They're calling me out of my house to come sing. I'll take it.
Then that's when you take the tip, if they give you a tip, you know? Yeah, for sure. That's funny.
But you know, so it begs the question, what is something, because I've already given away my answer, mm-hmm. if you think about it, what's something you just couldn't live without? And not Rosie, because I know you're going to contend with that one day. We're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, that's my dog, in case you're wondering.
Yeah. But what's something that you couldn't live without? For me, it's music. I can't imagine this life with.
You know, it's not music. I mean, music is a close second, but it's reading. Reading has always been and I think that's why I like musical theater, and the songs I liked before I really discovered musical theater were very, you know, like in the 70s, like the song Wildfire, that have a story, and sometimes what's the one? Listen, children, to a story. What's that called? That was written long ago. Okay, on a mountain. Oh, I can't. I'm just singing. I'm not singing, so you have to hear me sing. I'm singing because I'm trying to. Anyway, there's like another story song that was like a big deal in the 70s when I was little. And anytime there was tension in my household, or I was like the little fat kid in elementary school, and you know, now I'm the adult fat kid, but there was a time when I wasn't, but you know, it's easier when you're an adult sometimes. But I just, reading was always my, I guess, escape, but it didn't feel like it was like a, I have to do this. It was just like, I'm so happy when I'm reading. I got the Chronicles of Narnia. I still have the same set that I got in, I think, second grade or third grade for Christmas. And that I'm, you know, I still have that same, they're beaten to hell, but you know, that same set of books. There's a family legend that's true that I read from a cereal box when I was two. Like, I read out loud from a cereal box, and then I
three.
See, I was probably close to three, you know.
Well, like, this not is killing not me really. Because I've just learned you answering that question the way you did illuminated for me that if somebody asked me that question, my answer would be music.
Uh-huh.
But my close second, and we're talking by the face of a hair, is reading. Flipped on that.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, like, I always say there are things, even though I have such a good ear, and I'm going to say that just with objectivity, you know, it sounds braggy, but that's what makes me, I have a much better ear than I have a voice. I have a good voice, but I don't have a great voice. But I have a great ear, and I'm a really, like, just a really good analytic listener. And I think I was a little bit born with that. And also, I grew up listening to my burnout uncles, whose friends were, not them, but their friends were like, but they were probably high. I didn't know that at the time. Let's sit around the campfire, drink beer, and sing 60s or 70s folk songs with a guitar. Uh-huh. And there happened to be all these people that were like amazing at harmony. This one woman in particular, who sadly passed very young she had type 1 diabetes, and she just had all the bad complications of it. But like her whole family, and they were friends with my burnout uncles, my younger uncles. My dad had 10 brothers and sisters. And so I grew up like down the street from my grandparents, and that's where they would have the bonfires and, you know, listen. Mm-hmm. And then the church that we went to was very much like 70s Catholic folk music, which was pretty rocking and really good with harmony. Funnily enough, I'm divorced, and when I got married, should have known that this was a sign. All I really cared about was the music. But the point of this story is, even though I'm so ear acute, like aware and driven, I need to, if someone's reading something to me, I'm like, can you just show it to me? Cause I need to see it. And I'm the kind of person who studied by remembering where things were on the page when I was cramming.
You and I been the same person this whole time?
I think so. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
No, like all joking aside, all these sentences coming out of your mouth, I'm going, me too.
Yeah.
Like my sisters and I sang harmony all through our growing up in church. Oh,
that's awesome.
I have an uncle in he's gone now, but I had an uncle in West Virginia that played guitar and banjo. And when we'd go, he and I would sing in harmony. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm getting goosebumps sitting here thinking, okay, my dad had 14 brothers and sisters.
Oh, wow. That's why you pissed me off at karaoke, because I'd want to be like, listen, bitch, harmonize with me.
You know, I mean, I sit there and there are a couple of guys that come to the bar and sing karaoke that have really strong voices. And more importantly, an ear.
Yeah.
They can stay on their part.
Right.
With me singing with them, which I have found is not a widespread skill.
Right. Well, here's what I go through is I have a couple of friends with really big voices and I have like a medium-sized voice. Mm-hmm. I'm like, would you just please calm down so that we can actually blend and harmonize, you know?
Yeah.
Because to me it's that's just different sensibility. Like you like the solo life. I'm much more gratified by harmony. So
No. Incorrect assumption.
Oh, so sorry.
Harmony first for me too.
Okay.
I just have lack of anyone that can do it with
me. Well, we're going to find a place in Chicago or wherever we meet and we're going to go do it. You know what I mean? That'll be so fun.
God, yeah. Because like you were just saying, for me, yes, I love to sing. I have a big voice and I love to belt out a ballad like Celine. Scoot over, Celine. I'm moving in. You know? Or Adele. Whatever, right. Baby. But there is nothing better than my voice and an equally strong voice blending to where it sounds like two notes coming out of the same voice.
Right. And I'm probably not, it doesn't sound like my voice is quite as big as yours, but that's okay. You know, like it's not a small voice. It's just not a huge voice. Yeah,
I know how I want that one voice, two tones.
Right.
And when you can get that in a choir, shit.
Yeah. And that's why I've started now that like nobody's really singing choral music, but there's a choir in Richmond that I'm going to join as soon as it comes back up. It's called, I think it might be called One Voice RVA, but it's black singers and white singers, and they come together to sing all different kinds of music and also to have hard conversations about race, which, and Richmond has a really, I hate to say rich history. They have a real history with slavery, which I did not know. I knew that there was a lot of controversy when I moved, when they were taking down all the statues in Richmond. But one of the reasons I wanted to move here was because I knew it was really, they had a rich theater scene pre-COVID. I had no idea about the depth of the history, but then, you know, it is the capital, was the capital of the Confederacy, and it is the capital of Virginia. But I knew there would be kids that my mission could reach more. In this area, because in New York, a lot of kids have those opportunities. But it was funny that we're talking about this, because I was randomly searching something on Spotify and I know what it was. There was something on the Today Show and the person was singing, I think they were singing the Leonard Cohen song, Hallelujah, which I love. I love so many versions of it. And I was like, I wonder who this is. So I searched it because I missed it. Full disclosure, I do a lot of work with my computer in the bathtub. I've never dropped her in the bathtub, but I had like the TV on in the other room. I could have just put it on YouTube TV on my computer, but I had the TV on in the other room. So I was hearing the singing and I was like, who is this? I want to know. And they have a lot of like pretty new artists on the third hour of the Today Show. So I didn't find it, I don't think, but I did find there's a duet from the movie Sing that's Jennifer Hudson and somebody else that's famous. I'll look it up while we're talking, but who do this really cool version of Hallelujah. And I was like, I could do that with one of my friends who's a singer, and then I'm like, nope, because she would never harmonize. She would, I mean, she can harmonize, but she wouldn't chill out and like focus on the harmony. You know what I mean? And that's what to me made this arrangement cool.
Yeah.
So
that is the best part of singing.
I agree. And I miss it a lot.
And you know what? Politically, you can say what you want about the Dixie Chicks, but those bitches can blow.
Oh yeah.
My God.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And who was it I heard? Sheryl Crow and Emmy Lou Harris.
Oh my gosh. That would have been great.
It is awesome. Singing a song called Nobody's Perfect. Look it up on YouTube. It will give you goosebumps.
Whew. I will. So, duet version. It's Tori Kelly and Jennifer Hudson, and it is so cool.
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna look that one up.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, one of them does one verse, one of them does the other, and then they have some really cool harmonies that they built in. Mm-hmm. And it's a simple song, so it's not, I mean, it's that the simplicity of the melody is what makes it so pretty, mm-hmm. In my opinion. But you know, like I always say I'm theory dumb. I'm not theory dumb, but I'm not theory smart enough, like my guitar teacher is, for example, to know why it has the effect it has. Like, you know, they talk about the secret chord that David played and pleased the Lord. And there's some chord progression in there that's like, I don't know if it's secret and pleases the Lord, chord, but it's like, it's cool. It's cool, you know?
Yeah.
But I just always loved that song. So, and I like Katie Lang's version too, in case you're looking for recommendations, people out there. Okay. That's probably the first version I ever heard. You know, really? The Leonard Cohen version, my guitar teacher always plays the Leonard Cohen version. He's like, you know, and he's a terrible singer. And I'm like, I know, I get it. We don't have to listen to him, but he was a genius. So whatever. But I love my guitar teacher. He's good times. Yeah. But for me, it's even though I love music, if you took my ability to read, like my Kindle, it's, you know, it's funny because, but here's the rub though. If you know that, like they had those games, like, I don't know if it's Cards Against Humanity. Also, what does There's the Rub mean? Who knows? That's a Shakespeare thing, but I just thought it makes me so fancy when I say it. But if, you know, like, would you rather be without your sense of sight or your sense of, or your hearing? I would pick hearing. I would pick sight. I would rather be without my sight because I have to hear for my job. But then I would be so sad because of reading. It's like it's a contradiction because I don't like audible books. I just don't. I zone. I can't listen to music when I'm studying. And that's because the music distracts me, but it's because I have to focus. I don't know. It's just a weird contradiction, you know, but now I might have to change my answer because if I was on a desert island and didn't have to work anyway, if I was on a desert island, I would say I would want to lose my hearing. But if I had to work, I would say I would want to lose my sight, but I would be very sad, you know?
Yeah, I don't. I think it was James Gaffney I was talking mm-hmm. to, and we talked about this, which one could you give up? And I've always said I'd rather lose my sight because of music. I don't want to not hear it. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I also know that, you know, I can't approximate deafness, mm-hmm. but if I do this to where I plug my ears and the only thing I hear in my head is my own voice, you know?
Yeah.
And it's I can feel music.
Yeah.
Even non-percussive music. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. can feel it mm-hmm. because it's a vibration.
Right. You can put your hand. Have you seen the movie Coda on Apple TV?
No.
About the deaf child or the hearing child of deaf adults. Child of it's Coda means, well, you know, it's a musical term, but it also means child of deaf adults. Oh, you would love it because it's about, she's a singer and she wants to sing and her brother and her parents are all deaf. And they're like, why would you want to do something that we can't participate in? But she's mm-hmm. really good at it. And, you know, it's like her coming of age, breaking out. But there's this one really such a poignant scene where her and all the deaf, it's Marley Matlin and a deaf male plays her dad, a deaf, and he's so good. And, you know, so all the, of course, all the people who are deaf are really deaf. And her dad touches her throat and she has done a solo at a concert and gets a big, a big ovation, but her parents have no idea what it was like. Mm-hmm. So he has her sing it again. This is kind of like this is a big spoiler alert, but it's still worth watching. He has her sing it again after the concert and his way of like telling her he supports her wish to leave their family. They have a fishing business and they've always used her to translate, you know, mm-hmm. with all the hearing people. Mm-hmm. But as he puts her hand on his, he puts his hand on her throat and asks her to do it again.
And so you can make me cry.
It. I know, it's amazing. It's amazing. And she can really sing too. It's really good. Yeah. Really, really good. So yeah, I know it's so.
Yeah. Because if I think about work, I need my eyeballs to do what I do, even though no, technically I don't. Cause I had a client probably 15 years ago. He was blind and he was building his own website. So it can be done. Screen readers and all that good fun. But I'm very, very grateful that I have both and I'm not trying to lose either one of them.
And one of the groups that we support, well, we support, of course, the disabled performers. And I've seen, there's an amazing deaf actor named John McGinty, who I've seen in an inclusion workshop, who did a singing duet. And it was, I don't remember, it was, I can't remember if they had a person sing for him or if he just signed and the woman sang, but it was unbelievable. He's great. Mm. And then there's the whole, and different, but also really wonderful, is the Deaf West Theater, Deaf West Theater, which is based in LA. And they do productions, which one of which was Spring Awakening on Broadway, where they have deaf and hearing actors combined, and the deaf actors always have a hearing person is like their double who sings for them. It's so cool and powerful. And they did Big River on Broadway some years before that. But, you know, it's just, there's so many ways. And they just, not about hearing, but they just did a production at the Olney Theater in Maryland, where it was a lot of press about it because Belle was a Black woman of plus size, whatever the hell you call me, whatever I am, you know.
And me.
Right. And we're beautiful. So, you know, and
we are.
And the Beast was an actor named Efren Ruggiero, whose Instagram name is Lord Pegleg. And he is an incredible dancer and actor who was diagnosed with bone cancer in college. And so he's an amputee, and he has different prostheses, one for like running, one for dancing. Uh-huh. And so that was part of, they built that into his character. And in fact, in one scene I didn't get to see it, but I saw a lot of press about it. They dragged him by his prosthesis to kind of emphasize this was part of his beastliness to the world. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, the inclusion that's happening is really cool. But there needs to be more all the time. So yeah, thankfully there are really, really smart people out there doing that work. And we want more people like that to know that there's a room for them in the theater. And that's why one of the reasons we're here is for that group of people.
All right, I have a last question for you. You ready?
Yes, ma'am.
It's a big one.
Okay.
What's the best thing about being Ellen Lutrick?
From my personal perspective.
Well, I'm asking you, darling. Yeah.
Okay.
Best thing about being you.
Well, this is something that has only been understandable to, or true and therefore understandable to me, maybe in the last, since maybe like 2016 or so, but especially since I started TFCA, the Fund for College Auditions, is in high school, this is relevant, I promise. So I had a bank, you know, you do your secret questions for bank passwords. And one of my first ones, of like probably my first adult bank account, was who was your least favorite teacher in high school? And I will not say this gentleman's name, but I remember my brother and I, we had a joint access to it because we were helping care for our dad. And he was like, it's Mr. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know, it is, you know, and I graduated from high school in 1987 and he graduated in 1989. So that tells you how much of a mark this guy made on me. And he told me in 10th grade that I was, and I had just won a big writing award. And he had told, and my school was pretty big. I graduated in the class of 699. And my brother graduated in the class of 1,000. He said, the teacher said, you're pretty good at a lot of things, but you're not great at anything. And I kind of also got that same feedback freshman year in college from some professors in an honors class that I was taking, because I was
in an honors class.
Yeah.
Let's not miss that point, please.
Well, right. I know. And I had a full academic scholarship, but compared to some of my peers, I didn't come from a small private school where you were, it wasn't that I had less, I wasn't less qualified to be there. I was less used to speaking on very deep topics concisely, which is still kind of a problem, although I can do it when needed. Thankfully, I was trained as a speech pathologist that way, like get to the problem when you're talking to a physician. So, you know, it. I remember a professor who I really dearly love said, Ellen has many interests. And at the time I was a nursing major in this liberal arts honors core, which was very unusual. And I ended up not majoring in nursing, which I love the medical field. Nursing just wasn't a good fit for me because my handshake when I'm nervous and it would have been a disaster. I love the medical, the clinical part though. And I ended up back in that world. But he said, Ellen has many interests. It will be interesting to see where they focused. And they didn't. So the best thing about being me is I get to do all of the things I love, theater, music, left brain, right brain, if we believe in that, you know, medicine.
Yeah.
And it, and I just followed the path. Again, this is like vomitous kind of like, I just followed every path that I wanted to. And I completed things. I wasn't like, it seems, it, it can seem like if you look at my academic history, like, was I flaky? I don't feel like I was. I just knew when things weren't right. And the same thing with jobs. I knew when it was time to be done. You know, I taught for 7 years. That's not a short amount of time. But I knew that I still loved teaching. But in that setting, it wasn't as productive for me. And I ended up in medical voice. And that's a pretty big shift from teaching social studies. But it's it's just that I get to do every day all of these things that are, you know, that I've, they're related because I've, they are related, but I've also made them really related. And I could never have predicted that back in the day, which is one reason that I love working with high school students because I, and their parents, because I'm like, you know, it, you will figure it out. And I get when you're paying tuition, especially for the parents I work with in the for-profit, like, but it costs a lot of money. And I had scholarships for myself, so I was able to have that journey. Although my graduate school, no scholarships, never going to pay those loans off. I've paid about half of them off, but still, it's a lot. You know, but I don't regret it because I love that medical stuff. And I, you know, I just, I get to keep it in my life as long as I, if as long as I keep the opportunities afloat, it's up to me. Like I, you know, I have control over it. And sometimes I jokingly say, like, if I ever put any effort into my voice therapy private practice, I well, COVID sort of stopped everything because no one was performing. But so there were not vocal injuries because people were resting. And we don't want vocal injury, but we want to help people when they have it, you know.
Right.
But yeah, that's the answer is I get to do the things I want to. And that was seen as a kind of a weakness or not a strength, at least, that I had diverse interests. Ha! Wrong!
Well, I can see the golden thread through all of those. And I don't think it's 100% because I know you. I think at least a chunk of it is because that is yet another freaking thing that we have in common.
Yeah. I don't know your story. I need to hear that story. I mean, I know parts of it, but I don't know really the career part of it, you know, and how that dovetailed with, and it also, it always has to do with your personal life too, right? You know?
Yes. I have my very first live-in boyfriend to thank for my career and, or at least the going to programming school. And cause I knew nothing. He came home one day and said, "Hey, we're going to college." Okay. What are we going to study? And he said, computer programming. I said, computer, what? I've never seen a computer before. This is 1983.
Whoa.
And, yeah. And he goes, "Well, you're just too fucking smart to be managing a restaurant the rest of your life. So you're going to school." Because what he knew about me, and that was a big bone of contention at that point in my life, was that I had big plans to go to college and get a teaching degree. I wanted to teach gifted students, you know, right the wrongs done to yourself in your own education, you know? And all that went out the window with all that moving around. And, you know, I don't blame my parents because they were doing the level best they could with what they had to work with. And I get that just like I have the last 35 years, you know, but be that as it may, it still resulted in I didn't go to college or wasn't thinking I was going to college. Yeah. And so he comes home and announces that one day. And I'm like, at that point, I'm like, whatever. Okay. Because another thing that's true about me is school is my safe place. School is where I excel.
Oh, same. School
is where I get the pat on the head. And
yes, ma'am.
In fact, so much so that Allison's aren't. She's my very first podcast episode. Allison and I have this in common too. We have both been in situations where when we did our best, we were accused of our parents.
Oh my gosh.
So we had to half-ass our effort to win. But in her case, it was the science fair. She did her own project 1 year and they disqualified her because they swore up and down that her parents did it. It was so awesome. The next year, she half-assed it, just whatever, well, whatever, and won the whole flipping thing. Glory, laud, and honor in every corner.
Crazy.
So the message that she internalized was, you don't have to try. Your good is not, your best is not wanted, much less considered the best.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I felt that emotion in my life. And I suspect you've probably had that a spoonful or two in your life.
Yeah. And it's sort in a sort of different way. And mine was more about like code switching, like, who am I talking to? And it is the same though. It's dumb. It's like, in what way do I have to dumb it down or kick it up? Because what I was often accused of is being like too frivolous. People saw that I was goofy and silly, and then that didn't align with being smart, intellectually smart, or as smart as I should be to be in a history PhD program at UCLA, for example, which I didn't like anyway. But, you know, I wanted to, my mom gave me the really good advice. Look, you got a bunch of fellowships, try it out. You'll never have to say what if, you know, and I never will, because that was not my jam. But yeah, people only now as when I'm an adult and I can code switch really fast, you know, and also I think I have more gravitas as an adult in general, because I just carry myself differently. But I'm pretty you know me, I'm pretty goofy anyway. And when I was younger and goofy and look younger than I am, thank God, or at least that I did, you know, people were just like, who is that? In fact, one of my favorite colleagues who's has a very stern exterior, went to Carnegie Mellon for voice undergrad and master's, and we worked together in a theater school. And his favorite thing to tell about us is we got paired together in this theater class where everybody team taught, and our boss paired us together, and he thought, who is this perky bimbo? Not bimbo like I was dressed slutty, like, who is this like off the wall person? And then we got to know each other and we have the deepest respect for each other, you know. But that was my thing. Yeah, for sure.
I already see that we're gonna have to do this again, because you know, I say that at the end of every one of these almost, and it's really beginning to impress upon me. I know some really awesome.
As do I. Well, I can't, you know, Peter Thorson, for all he said, I was a flake. He did not know he was going to create the love, the whatever the opposite of bromance is, of the century.
Right.
The love story of the century.
Right. Yeah. Well, Mr. Peter, if you listen to this, nah, nanny boo boo.
Thank you. It was so fun.
If you're hell-bent on wringing every last drop of awesome out of this life and the time you have here, I invite you to visit SuzanneSaysPodcast.com for more conversations and to subscribe. If you'd like to be a guest and have a conversation, email me at letstalk@SuzanneSaysPodcast.com. Thanks for listening.